This is the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher on VSiN.
Good morning and happy new year, 2023. It's the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Patrick Maher, of course, Michael Lombardi, as we welcome you in. Now, you're either one of two people. You're like me and lame in bed by 9:30, or you're like my guy and my girl, Michael and Millie Lombardi, who were raging until 3 a.m. Hi, Michael. No. Good morning.
Good morning, Patrick. But how about the unbelievable timing of the new year on East Coast time to the most deciding factor in the Ohio State-Georgia game and, you know, lining it all up. So there we all are, too much wine in our systems, too many bottles of wine, too much food, and here we sit, and is Georgia going to win or is Ohio State going to make the kick? And Ryan Seacrest becomes the most important person in my house, and we've got to flip the channel to see the ball drop as it's going on. I mean, like, that was like, oh, my gosh, what am I doing? And then I come back to it after I see Seacrest do the countdown, and I find out that that they didn't even get close to making the kick, that it was that bad. But what a day of college football, Patrick. It was unbelievable. It was, I mean, we almost need Dick Vitale to come on and say, oh, my God, it was a sensational, baby. It was an amazing day.
Those two college football semifinal games paid off. Before we get to them, I'm hearing from multiple sources, so maybe you can corroborate or help us out with this. I'm hearing from multiple sources there was big-time drama at the Lombardi household. Now, we understand that Millie runs it, but once Seacrest became involved, my understanding of the situation is there was some tense times between you and Millie.
Oh, yeah. No, at this point of the night, there was none because I just conceded it and figured we'll go back and replay it. And then I realized that if you change the channel, you don't get the ability to replay it. So, but all worked out. As soon as the ball dropped and everybody started blowing horns, then we went back to the game and I was able to see it. That game was fascinating in the sense that you could just see Georgia didn't realize that their other opponent in the game was the clock, and they scored way too early. And, you know, and Ohio State's coming back down the field, and then they're trying to throw it on drop-back throws. I mean, C.J. Stroud almost got sacked out of field goal range. Did you remember that play?
I
mean, before he threw it away. I don't know what they were doing, and people are like, well, you got to keep throwing it. You know, I got somebody on Twitter said, oh, Lombardi, you're old school. You know, you got to keep throwing. No, that's not smart. Like, you got to, I'm not saying don't throw it, but the ball's got to come out, and you got to be able to get the ball to where you can't get sacked. Remember, I say this all the time. In every quarterback room, there should be a field, a simulation of the field, so that every day he comes in his room, he looks at where he can't take a sack on the field. And this was the perfect example of it, because if he takes that sack there, now he got lucky, got the ball away, and there was a receiver there, but if he takes a sack there, that game's over.
Ohio State covers the number, a 42-41 winner for the defending national champs. Georgia moves on to take on TCU. We'll get to TCU, Michigan in a second. Just quickly, 8 days from now, we're going to have the national championship game. Would you like to take a stab at the number? It's posted. I don't think you've looked. So it's TCU and Georgia.
I have looked already.
Oh, you have.
I looked last night. I thought it would be under 14, and it's 13.5. And then I think the total's 62. But Thomas told me this morning it was 62. Which to me, look, both teams, I think we're going to see another game. I think that over total is going to tick because TCU can throw the ball. We talked about this off air. Why is Max Duggan not talked about in the esteem that some of these other quarterbacks are? I mean, the guy makes a lot of plays. He can run with it. He's tough. He's instinctive. You know, he was the difference in the Michigan game. There's no doubt. And so, you know, when you put that on, they're going to move the ball in Ohio State secondary. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Now, can they stop Ohio State? I don't know. I mean, excuse me, can they stop Georgia? I don't know.
Well, a couple of things. One, you and I were both on that over. TCU Michigan flies over the posted total. You had what, 96 points scored? You had 83 points scored in Ohio State, Georgia. Let's give Thomas Gable some credit. He came on the Lombardi Line yesterday and said, look to the over in both games. Don't look at these trends as far as bowl games cashing to the under. Let's just take a step back, and then we'll get to the NFL. Let's just start with this. Those games delivered. I mean, that was about as entertaining as a two-game stretch as you're going to find. TCU, Michigan, there were a lot of good athletes on the field. And frankly, you and I were discussing it before. Quentin Johnson and Max Duggan may have been the two best players on the field that game.
Yeah, but I felt like, you know, I'm reading Twitter during the game, and Twitter, oh, TCU's dominating. No, I never felt that way. I felt like Michigan was behind. I never thought TCU was in control. Like, I thought neither team was in control, even though the score. Look, I mean, this game's completely different. If Harbaugh takes the 3 points to start the game, I think that was a mistake. If they, I don't know how it's not a touchdown. Like, I don't know what a touchdown looks like if that's not a touchdown, right?
It was a touchdown, 100% universally. Everybody agrees. And I was wondering what you thought after they botched it. You thought he should have kicked it?
I thought he should have kicked it. I mean, I think he should. I mean, look, in a game like that, you need to collect points. I'm a big believer in that. Like, you're not going to decide the game on one play in the first quarter. Just collect the points, right? And so if he gets those three, and then and they rule that a touchdown, I mean, the game's a lot closer than what the score was when everybody's saying TCU's dominating. And then they make this comeback, and at the end of the day, they could never come up with a blitz that could get home and stop them from converting a big third down, like the crosser. You know, they got a chance there. And Dugan makes a hell of a throw. That touchdown pass he makes on a boot when they brought the star off the edge, he throws it. You know, I was watching the Skycam version of the ESPN game. It was fascinating. I loved it. And so you could see it, and he makes a hell of a throw over there to the side. So I thought Michigan was going to win the game. I thought eventually they were going to win the game, but what let them down more than anything is they couldn't get a stop when they needed one.
TCU was 200-1 coming into the season. This is an unprecedented run for Sonny Dykes and the Horned Frogs as they'll take on Georgia, the defending champs. I don't know if you should have needed it, but Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud, if they weren't 1-2 in the forthcoming draft, last night showed a lot. Bryce Young played well when he didn't have to play, and C.J. Stroud was everything for Ohio State last night.
He really was. I mean, he made all the throws he had to make, and you know, he handled the pressure that Georgia was trying to bring. Look, I think we said it yesterday on the air. Georgia can't get pressure on you, and the one liability is in their secondary. And if you can match up and protect, if you can handle the power, because they don't have the ability to really create the pressure, you're going to be able to throw the football. I'll tell you, I thought Stetson Bennett made some big-time throws in that game, and I never thought I would say that.
Played
I thought
well.
That kid – in the final drive, the throw he makes inside the numbers was as good a throw just before he was going to get hit. He made some incredibly good throws. And, you know, I thought Kirby was fascinating after the game. I mean, Kirby felt like they didn't, you know, and I agree with him. They didn't play their best game. They did not play their best game. And they were able to find a way to win the game. And he was challenging his team to enjoy this moment. But we got to take it up a step.
Last time we had a preseason AP unranked team to win a title, that's what TCU's aiming for, was 1990 with Georgia. Happened in 84 with BYU, 83 with Miami, and 81 with Clemson. So a little history on the line in 8 days for TCU. The 96 combined points are the second most ever in a college football playoff game, trailing only 102 in 2018 when Georgia beat Oklahoma 54-48. Again, it was an awesome day, as you know, you had the rivalry going on with the new year, but those two playoff games, you had Seacrest kind of looming and creeping in the mix, but those two playoff games were awesome. I enjoyed everything about that, Michael.
Yeah, and I, you know, Felica tweeted this out earlier after the game. He said that since 13 until now, there was only been two games that have been decided by one score, three games decided by one score, and yesterday we had two of them.
Yep.
And so the spread mattered yesterday. We felt like the spread wouldn't matter, and it obviously did.
It's funny you say that. We talked all show about, listen, these college football playoff games, it's 20-point blowouts across the board, and then yesterday the points came into play on both games in a big way.
Yeah,
so there it is.
And I don't think Michigan has anybody to blame but themselves. I really don't. I mean,
on Michigan. You really thought they should have won that game, huh?
I think they. I mean, they don't get the call. They're red zone. I mean, look, what. We're going to talk about this. Today's January 1st, right? So let's get used to talking about this from now until the Super Bowl's been decided. What separates playoff winners to losers? Red zone offense, the ability to convert third and short, being able to score inside the one. Those three things are going to determine who's going to be the champion, which is why you have to like Philadelphia. Really good red zone offense. They convert every third and one with their rugby offense. They just line up in that rugby formation and push the quarterback a yard ahead. And Michigan failed in all three of those areas, and that's why they lost. and give TCU credit. They made the plays in the red zone that they had to make. They made the plays on short yardage. I mean, if Georgia were to lose that game yet last night, it would go back to the same thing. Georgia couldn't convert any third and fives. Everybody talks about we got to get in third and manageable. Well, it's not manageable if you don't convert it.
Your boy Kirby was bitter after the game. He said they didn't play their A game. I don't think they played their B-plus game. There was a lot left on the field for Georgia.
I don't think they schemed their A game either. I think he's got to assume accountability in player coaching and scheme in that game. I mean, they did not do a good job of they didn't make it physically hard for Ohio State. When you let those receivers just get into the routes and play backyard football, that's when they're at their best.
They had a lot of space. Those Ohio State wide receivers had a lot of space.
Yeah, no doubt. They were scared of them. They were scared of the speed of Ohio State. That was pretty clear.
Which is unbelievable and confounding because Georgia's fast everywhere at every level. I thought Day did a hell of a job preparing Ohio State. I didn't think they were going to hang, but a 42-41 winner. Can you imagine
we'll
going back to
Columbus?
Come back.
I thought Day felt every reaction he was making. I thought the pressure, he felt incredible pressure on him. Like you could see. He was overreacting to everything. I mean, the first stop in the game, he's going crazy. Like, you got to have some poise in those situations.
Okay, 2 weeks to go, NFL regular season. It's getting real as we approach the playoffs. We've got every scenario ready for you today here on the Lombardi Line because remember, for bettors, teams are mailing it in. Teams are starting to protect themselves. Teams' strategic decisions like Jacksonville today against Houston. We'll get to that number next. It's very, very interesting what's happening with some of these numbers as we continue along. It's the Lombardi Line. Happy New Year. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
To the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, VSiN pros are getting all the picks today in the NFL. You can get them too for $79. You get everything we offer when you become a VSiN pro through March Madness. VSiN.com/subscribe. When you sign up right now, it's a holiday special. You get $20 in credit for the VSiN online store. So remember, you get everything. Lombardi's Look Ahead, exclusive articles, betting guides, the betting splits as a part of our Pro Tools package. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe for more information right now. It's VSiN.com/subscribe. Michael Lombardi, I'm Patrick Maher. A sincere happy new year from all of us here at the Lombardi Line and, of course, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Hope you had a nice New Year's Eve, maybe waking up with a little bit of a headache, but it'll be okay as we've got plenty to go as far as 2 weeks regular season, motivation all over the place. Michael Lombardi, you just saw it. Chicago and Detroit, this is fascinating. 6 Detroit Lane when we woke up this morning. For some reason, that got hit down to 5.5. Remember, new bettors, 6 is a very key number. To dip below that is fascinating here.
Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, if you go back and watch, and I could see why, right? So Chicago hasn't won since the Monday night game in New England. And they've been all over the place. Now, they covered against Philadelphia with the backdoor cover on a large spread. And they haven't played very good. But I think when you watch Detroit, I think if Elliott's not playing safety today, and we'll see if he's inactive, if Detroit plays nickel again like they did against Carolina, which they didn't hold up at all, Chicago will be able to run. And if you go back and watch the Chicago tape against Detroit on Soldier Field that day, Chicago was winning that game. They're a two-touchdown lead going in the fourth quarter. They turned the ball over for a touchdown. They don't get an interception when they had Goff intercepted, and it got an illegal contact, which was one of those calls that where'd that come from? But anyway, you know, so I think that's why. I think this probably is a little bit – I thought it was a little bit long and the long of a line to begin with. I could see why people are on Chicago. You know, I didn't love Chicago. I mean, I don't trust Chicago because I think Detroit playing at home will be able to move the ball. They've got to control the ball, Detroit. Detroit has to pace themselves and not allow Chicago to kind of have those plays. But the way they played run defense last week against Carolina has to worry you.
Market reacting to Carolina and how badly Detroit played. They don't play well in the cold, including Jared Goff, but they've been great ATS. They enter 4-0 ATS their past 4 home games, 7-1 ATS Detroit Lions in their last 8 overall. By the way, that total, Michael Lombardi, 52.5, that's elevated. However, both Chicago and Detroit over teams each enter 10-5 to the over this year. There's going to be some points at Ford Field.
Yeah, I do. I think so. And when you break down this game, for me, and I go through my game codes, like what are the top areas that determine winning? And the and Detroit's in the 10 of the top 12. They're in 10 areas of the 19. They're in the top 12. Chicago doesn't have any strengths. The strength of Chicago is the play breaks down and Justin Fields takes off. Or there's a loose play and he makes a throw down the field. But against Detroit, that could happen. You know, Detroit's one of those teams, Patrick, a little bit like we saw yesterday in college football. Detroit's not going to get control of the game. Detroit's never going to be in control of the game, even if they're up by 10, if they're up by 13. You know, they're not going to get this. Now, my line on this game is, you know, this is I'm way out of balance here. Because of the game, because of my 19 areas, that Detroit, I have Detroit should be playing at home, should be almost 11-point favorite. So it would be an should be an automatic play. And then my game codes tell me it's 10-0. So that should be a good play. But to me, I'm a little suspicious of last week. Can they play run defense? And I think Chicago could backdoor cover this. Now, interesting.
Go ahead, Michael. Sorry.
You know, I saw Circa put this out last night that I think one guy in the Survivor has Detroit, and two of them have the Giants, the three that are remaining.
Now, let's go back to that graphic because we always like to juxtapose Michael's number with the consensus in the market. Again, 6 down to 5.5 with Detroit laying it. You do have a lot of wiggle here. Are we backing off the Lions?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not giving the Lions out as one of my play. I lean Lions. I don't care that the Lions moving. Okay. I'm worried about a backdoor cover because what I said earlier is I don't think Detroit, because of their defense, will ever get control of the game. And last week, their corners, Okuda, their corners did not tackle very well. Nobody tackled well on their defense. Now, I'm sure they're going to play at a much higher level. There's a lot to play for here. But, you know, the space and the athleticism of Justin Fields on the turf there, it concerns me a little bit. And Chicago, and these rivalries in conference, you know, they're always closer games. I think you got to consider that as well.
I think the Bears, who lead the league in rushing, and the Lions, who can't stop the run, I think that's a concern. And the Bears have been feisty. They've been plucky. Even though they haven't won, they've been really, really competitive in these games. The Detroit Lions, by the way, going into this one, have a 17% chance to make the postseason. If they beat the Bears today, it improves to 23%. So a lot on the line for the Detroit Lions. Again, that number has dipped down to 5.5. Michael, on my board, as far as the playoff ramifications, there's only two games today that don't matter. Arizona, Atlanta, we'll get to that in just a bit. And fascinatingly enough, Jacksonville and Houston at Houston today. The number right now is Jacksonville laying 3. It feels short to you. Why? Jacksonville literally has nothing to play for here because week 18 is everything for the division.
Right. Now that line went back up to 3.5, and I think Adam Schefter moved that line. And why did Schefter move the line? Because Schefter came out today and said that Doug Peterson and sources tell him, whomever the source is, they're going to play their guys. They're not resting anybody. They're committed to going all in. So that line moved, and you'll see some 3.5s out there. And I think it moved back to where it opened at 4, and you'll see some 3.5s. I think there's here in New Jersey, DraftKings has it at 3.5. So there's some 3.5s out there. There's still some 3s. And I think ultimately, I don't know why Peterson is so preoccupied. Now, let's go back. They played them earlier in the year, and this is one of the Houston's wins, right? Houston beat them. Now, they turned the ball over. They moved the ball up and down the field. The game's a 6-3 game going into the final drive, and Houston scores a touchdown to win the game. But to me, you know, this is one of those maybe Peterson wants to establish himself as the AFC best team, but they should come out. I mean, when you look at this team in Houston, they don't have anything to play for other than they've played well the last 3 weeks.
The Jags, Michael, have won 3 straight. They're seeking their first 4-game winning streak since 17. Of course, the last time they won the division, you remember 2017. But let's go back. The only thing we can do with Doug Peterson and philosophically how he's going to approach this Texans game is what he's done in the past. And you've talked about it. We've seen Doug Peterson in this spot before.
Right, but, you know, maybe that was the Eagles staff. Because remember, when he was the head coach of the Eagles, one of the reasons they divorced is because Peterson wanted more say. Peterson wasn't he was part of the organization, the head coach, but he wasn't controlling everything from his staff down to analytics. And maybe that was, he wanted to play his guys, and they told him to take it out. Now, they got Smith out of the deal from Alabama, the wide receiver, by not playing that game against the Giants, and they put Washington in the playoffs. So it'll be fascinating to see how this works out. The last time they played, and this is part of the stretch of Jacksonville that was confounding to me, They gained 422 yards, right? They ran the ball for 136. They threw it for 286. I mean, they were moving the ball up and down the field. They turned it over. So they're going to attack Houston. They know how Houston plays. They're going to attack Houston. And I think this is a little bit about how can we continue to improve as we go into the last game of the season. I honestly believe he's going to play his guys today.
How about Jacksonville as a favorite? They've lost seven straight games as an outright favorite, the Jags, including all three games where they've been favored this year. Four of those seven losses outright have come to the Houston Texans. Think about that. They don't do well when favoritism is placed upon them, and that's where they sit today. You nailed it, by the way. 3.5s are starting to pop up, and that is the influence of somebody like an insider in Schefter.
Yeah, I mean, when Schefter makes that announcement to the betting public, that's like the only reason you're looking at that line, that seems a little light, right? You're saying, okay, that line seems really light for this game. I mean, Houston hasn't played very well all year, right? I have this as a 9.57 game, even though it's in Houston. So there's no number that says Houston should play well in the game. I mean, they don't match up. They don't have any strengths. However, you know, it's a divisional game, so you've got to kind of weigh that a little bit too, right? They know each other. The familiarity between the two teams is important. But a lot of the reason I think that line was set at 4 is because what you said to start this block off, they don't have anything to play for.
Nothing. They're going to host the Titans. Remember, they hold the tiebreak right now with the Titans. They're going to host the Titans in Jacksonville next week in Week 18, and that's for the division. And by the way, a home game. So think about that. Think about what it means to the Jacksonville franchise to get a home game. So that's, you see what I'm saying? Philosophically, this means nothing today. It really just comes down to integrity. I mean, that's really, right. Like, if you think about it.
And momentum.
Fair.
Right? They're
Good
playing
point.
Well. They're playing well. And I think he wants to keep playing well. The quarterback is really playing well. And I think that the fact that they lost to this team earlier in the season is probably, you know, if they beat this team earlier in the year, they would have clinched the South. Think about that, Patrick.
That's a great point. By the way, we were sitting. We know Minshew is starting for Hurts. When we come back, we're going to discuss this because Philly needs a win. They've got two home games left. They need one win to clinch the one seed in the NFC and get a home bye. I think you were a little surprised that a number started to dip with Minshew announced as a starter. Remember, it was 6, 6.5. It's now down to 5, 5.5. New Orleans is a sharp play. Do you agree with that? Quickly, and then
no.
We'll come back and discuss it.
I don't. I mean, at 5.5, I think you got to play Philly. I know the sharps are all over New Orleans. Why? I don't know.
We shall discuss. We're just getting started. Playoff ramifications. Why does it matter? Because this is where you start understanding the impact of motivation on a spread. And when we come back, New Orleans, Philly, and Minshew next.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, horse racing plays from ExpressBet editor-in-chief Jeremy Plonk, both from Gulfstream Park today. In race 7, Jeremy has the 2-horse, Pure Pauline, at 3-1. In race 9, Jeremy Plonk likes the 4-horse, Dreaming of Kona, on top at a juicy 15-1 price. Bet these races and more at FirstBet, VSiN's preferred horse racing app. You sign up right now, you get $10 free. And then also, if you use the horse code HORSE200, you get 100% match on your first deposit up to $200. Go to VSiN.com/horses for details on this exclusive offer for VSiN fans, plus more top plays from VSiN and ExpressBet handicappers. As we welcome you back, the first show of 2023 right here on the Lombardi Line. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Hope you had a great night. As we say hi, a big day of football ahead. Michael Lombardi, I'm Patrick Maher. A ton of playoff ramifications, and of course the Eagles. So let's start there, then we'll get to Minnesota and Green Bay. We'll go to the Eagles right now. Hurts, there were some questions, Michael, would he or wouldn't he? This is very important for Philly because remember, they win one of these last two, they're going to get a bye and they're going to be atop the NFC. So they can rest next week if they beat New Orleans today and then rest, of course, with the bye. Right now it's sitting 5, 5.5 with Minshew under center.
Right, and so New Orleans is actually getting healthier. Chris Olave will play today. Marshawn Lattimore, who we haven't seen in probably 2 months, right? He's going to play a corner today, so that certainly helps New Orleans' defense. But to me, I thought Philly played well last week. They turned it over. It's going to be a it's going to be a challenge. They got to block their front. I think Lane Johnson at right tackle not playing is probably more significant than Minshew starting at quarterback. Right, he's their best offensive lineman, and against a good front like New Orleans, they're going to have to handle that. But to me, I think this is a game that when you watch Philadelphia, they can throw the football effectively. Weather's not – I mean, it's almost going to be 60 degrees here today on the East Coast. And it's beautiful. There's no rain. There's no nothing out there. So it'll be a fast track to play on. And the Eagle defense has to be able to force turnovers. And that's what New Orleans does. For me, whenever you're going to get behind New Orleans, the scary part about betting New Orleans or being with them is their inability to play mistake-free. They turn the ball over too darn much. They're one of the worst teams in turnover takeaway in the National Football League. And that shows up, and it gets a team like Philadelphia, that could be a real issue. So, Philly should be able to move the football effectively on them. Especially in the air. Now they've done a good job against in pass defense. They're fourth in the National Football League in yards per attempt allowed, the Saints defense, but they don't create turnovers. So you've got to methodically work the ball down the field, And so I think that's ultimately where Philadelphia has to gain the advantage.
Michael Lombardi, the key word today, motivation. Well, the Eagles are motivated. We just told you they can wrap up the conference. The Saints are also motivated. They win their last two, they get a bunch of help. They can get in the postseason. So the Saints are coming into this trying to get healthy, completely motivated. Let's go ahead and get your number. Again, we're showing 5.5 at BetMGM. You can find fives if you want to lay Eagles. What's your number on Saints-Eagles?
I had this at 9.1. And I like, and the number shot up to 6.5 and it came back to 5.5. I think a lot of people on New Orleans. New Orleans is the sharp play. I would say today, if there's a steam play or if there's a sharp play from people here in the book, it's all on New Orleans, surprisingly, even though this is an Eagle house here. But I tend to go the other way. I think, to me, New Orleans turns the ball over. I don't trust Andy Dalton in a big game on the road in a hostile environment. I think that could be an issue. If Philly's got to play much better defensively. The other motivation for Philly, which we didn't mention, is Philly has New Orleans' first-round pick. If they add that loss to Philly, right, if they add the loss to New Orleans and knock them out, and then hopefully, that pick's going to get higher. So there's a double motivation here. And, now that they've had a week with Minshew, I think they feel more comfortable with what he can do. Goddard's back. Again, it comes back to the right tackle. Can he play well enough? But I just think, to me, New Orleans has been so inconsistent in terms of how they've played. Now, I know they won last week in Cleveland, but let's be honest. I mean, Deshaun Watson hasn't really been lighting it up there. And so they played against a quarterback that hasn't been that effective. They're on a two-game winning streak, and they played against Desmond Ridder, and they played against, Deshaun Watson, two guys that are not playing very well right now.
Yeah, I was going to point out the Saints' defense has been really good. They've allowed less than 20 points in four straight games. You noticed the distinction there. But seven of New Orleans' past eight games have cashed to the under. You notice a low total with the Eagles here, 41.5. So Minshew, a backup, the Saints' defense playing really, really well. Low total of 41.5 there in Philly.
And I think the strength of this is the fact that they, back in week 12 of the season, they go out to San Francisco. It's a 13-0 game. I mean, they didn't score on San Francisco, but they held San Francisco's offense to 13 points. So that tells you where they are. Then they have a chance to beat Tampa. I mean, if Mark Ingram stays in bounds, they beat Tampa. Think about that now. If Ingram stays in bounds on the second and eight play, and he stays in bounds with under 5 minutes to go, Tampa may not be even in the playoff race. They beat Tampa. Tampa storms back to beat them 17-16 in that game. Such a margin is so tight, right? But I think when you watch them, I mean, they have played much better defensively. But the last time they were in Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh beat them 20-10. I think Philadelphia's defense is better than Pittsburgh. And I think they'll be able to move the ball on New Orleans.
I can guarantee you, Michael, there's one team in the NFL that did not want the calendar to go to 2023. It's the Minnesota Vikings. 2022 is the year of luck for the Vikings. Yeah. Of course, we know what's happened with them. They're in Green Bay late window today. So Minnesota still fighting for that two seed. A two seed in the postseason gets you two home games. Very important for them. Green Bay still alive. I'll give you the playoff scenario, but they're hosting Minnesota. Again, this number right now is sitting 3 across the board with Minnesota laying it.
Is there something about purple that gives you luck? Because TCU has been whatever you want to say, I would say fortunate, lucky, right? I mean, how many people felt like after Kansas State got destroyed by Alabama that TCU, well, they were going to double down on TCU, right? But not TCU, give up a bunch of yards, no problem, we'll win the game. Same thing with Minnesota, purple people eaters, right? They come back, they win. You know, everybody counts them out, but yet they keep finding ways to win games. I mean, it's just somewhat remarkable how they do it. You overcome a deficit, no problem. You know, won two overtime games, not a problem. You know, and so here they are on the road in Green Bay. I got to check the weather here, Patrick. I don't think it's going to be bitterly cold.
It's going to be
up
fine.
There.
I just want to make a note of that. The weather is going to be wonderful across the country, which is fascinating because 2 weeks ago we had one of the worst weather days you could possibly imagine, and everywhere the weather is going to be just fine today.
35 degrees. It's going to be really good. They'll move the ball. I mean, look, I'm not sold on Green Bay. I mean, I watched Miami run the ball and throw the ball effectively on them, and then they stalled out in the second half after that fumble when Jared Reed created the fumble. I'm not sure that this is going to continue down that path, but to me, I think Minnesota matches up. I have Minnesota should be the favorite in the game. Like, and I know a lot of sharps are on Minnesota. That line has gone from 3.5 down to 3, which on Sunday, when that line movement goes like that, that tells you some serious people with money are playing it. I didn't play the game. A lot of people on the Packers at 3.5. I didn't take it in Russo because I didn't feel like, you know, that 3.5, it sat out there. I was worried about it. Plus, I don't trust Green Bay's defense. I really don't. I think that Minnesota will move the football. And when you go back and watch them play, you know, when you watch them play against Detroit, you know, they had, even though they got lost to Detroit and they were 2.5-point dog in that game, they had a chance to win that game. Remember, Justin Jefferson doesn't step out of bounds, but they stopped him. Elliott's got a great note for this game, too, that I think you saw there in his rundown.
Let me get that to you, Michael. I'm gonna read this slowly so you can digest it and everybody can digest it. You can do what you want with trends, but this is fascinating, Michael. This is going to be the 10th time in the last 20 years a team under 500 straight up, the Packers, will be favored over a team with an 80% or better win percentage in December. December or later, the Vikings. So you understand where we're at now. The same situation occurred 3 weeks ago against the Lions. Again, the Lions were favored over the Vikings, and the Lions won 34-23. So again, the 10th time this has happened. The previous 9 times and the previous 9 teams listed as favorites went 9-0 straight up, 8-0-1 ATS. So I hope that's digestible. That means the Packers win and cover today.
And so let's add a layer to this, right? So, okay, was this a game where the team that was the under 500 had something to play for, and the team that had an 80% winning percentage didn't?
Good point.
Okay, so you have to kind of separate that. But to me, in this game, Minnesota has a lot to play for. They want to be the 2 seed, right? If you're the 2 seed, you'll probably get Washington, or you might get the Giants to come back and play again. Look, no matter who Minnesota plays, it's going to be a hard game. No matter who Minnesota plays, whether they play Washington, whether they play Detroit, whether they play the Giants, they're going to be, even if they played Seattle, they're going to be under a field goal favorite. I mean, I can't imagine the line, even when they're playing at home, is going to be more than 3. I mean, that was like last week. They were a 5-point favorite. They were a 5-point dog to the Giants, favorite to the Giants. That was it. You knew the Giants. The Giants play close games no matter who they play.
A total anomaly today with the Packers being favored over the Vikings. But remember, that anomaly has cashed the last 9 times, 9-0.
Trust,
teams in the
Packers
spot, 9-0.
Trust the color purple, Patrick.
The color purple actually in the olden days was for royalty. And I know it's used in horse racing for the Breeders' Cup. So the color purple does have some significance here now. By the way,
it's a lucky number. It's a lucky color.
They don't want 2023 to happen, the Vikings. I can guarantee you that. Skull is not excited about the calendar flipping. The Giants, Michael Lombardi, your boy Daboll, who you know very, very well, he should be coach of the year. They win. They're in the postseason today. But why is the number headed towards the Colts? We'll discuss coming back.
To the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, turn a loss into a win with BetMGM. Place a one-game parlay wager with at least four legs on any pro football game. If all legs but one of the parlay hit, you're going to get your stake back and free bets up to $25. It's a great deal over at BetMGM right now. Take advantage of the one-game parlay wager. Again, you get $25 back if all hit except one of the legs. 21 years or older, 1-800-GAMBLER if you have an issue. Promotional offer not available Mississippi, Nevada, or New York. As we say Happy New Year, we'll repeat it all show. 2023 is upon us. Michael Lombardi, I'm Patrick Maher. This is the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We added in 2022 Masson. And so let's pay off Masson. We appreciate our audience, Masson, Nesson, Marquee, all over VSiN.com, all the new radio affiliates we've added. We appreciate all of you as we enter 2023. Let's start with the Ravens. You know, the Ravens are in an interesting spot. We haven't seen Lamar Jackson. Will we see Lamar Jackson? We don't know. They're hosting a team in the Steelers who, Michael, are kind of alive right now, and the Steelers are playing very well. It's Huntley. They're laying two. I'll get to the playoff ramifications, but let's start with your cap, the Ravens laying two today.
So when you go back and watch this game, and I think everybody in the Masson audience that did watch their Ravens play against Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh, they've got the sense that, man, Pittsburgh really had a chance to win the game, and they blew it, right? We never really controlled the game. We won the game, but we didn't control the game. And the fact that Mitchell Trubisky came in off the bench when Pickett got hurt and played really well. I mean, Trubisky played well, except, and this is the big except, and you can't excuse it, right? You can't say, well, he played well. No, he played well, but he turned the ball over three times, twice deep in the red zone, which would have been field goals. And those turnovers were the reason difference in the game. I mean, they won this game. Baltimore won this game with 215 yards rushing, right? And they were able to – they only threw it 17 times, and they had 104 yards. So they fumbled twice, didn't lose any. And so they were clean in the turnover takeaway column. But Pittsburgh was able to really throw the football effectively, especially against – and Marlon Humphrey's a great player. But Marlon Humphrey's is a slot corner. He's not an outside corner. He needs to play in the slot. Now, they paid him like an outside corner, which they had to. But he is really dynamic inside. He's a better inside slot, blitzing, play in the middle of the field. When he goes outside against these Pittsburgh receivers, he struggled in that game. And if Pickett plays well today, and the way they've played run defense the last 2 weeks against a really good run team in Las Vegas and against a really good run team against Carolina, if they don't run for 200 yards, where are they getting their offense? I thought last week against Atlanta, Atlanta had every opportunity to win the game. And Atlanta's defense is not any good. And yet Baltimore was fortunate. Correct. I just think, to me, Pittsburgh's playing better right now without Lamar. And if they stop the run, I think Pittsburgh's the better team.
Hey, Masson, if I told you that the Ravens could win the North, you'd tell me I'm crazy, right? Because Cincinnati's playing so well. They're right now, Cincinnati's 11-4 and Baltimore's 10-5. But remember, Baltimore holds the tiebreak. If Baltimore beats Pittsburgh today and beats Cincy next week, they win the North. I mean, that is fascinating, thinking about how well Cincy's played, and Baltimore's dealt with a myriad of injuries, but here they are. They can still win their division.
But Baltimore, let's say this, you know, Baltimore's a little bit like, you know, they're resourceful. They find ways to win. They play a lot of close games. They have the best field goal kicker in all of football. And they're really comfortable in a close game, right? So, you know, the last time they really just dominated a game was when they beat New Orleans down there on Monday night. I mean, that game was over quick. They only scored 20 in that game. Lamar played, right? Well, they beat the Colts 24-17. That was a lot closer game. They come back, you know, and they were able to really play as well as they could. I mean, they beat Denver 10-9. I mean, Carolina was what, 13-3? I mean, they're good at playing close games. And look, the last time they played, understand Huntley got hurt in that game and they had to go to Anthony Brown, which was a problem. But I think, to me, they're used to playing in these close games. They didn't beat Jacksonville. You know, they beat Pittsburgh by two. To me, if you're Pittsburgh and you're getting 2.5 on the road against a team that likes to play close games, I think you got to take it.
Pittsburgh still, you know, I say it honestly, not much of a chance, but still a chance to make the postseason. Also, how about this for punctuation? Mike Tomlin has 15 straight seasons without a losing record. The Steelers are 7-8. That's the longest streak by a head coach to begin a career in NFL history. He's done a hell of a job with the Steelers team.
You know, and I think to me, what you really value in a head coach is his team improving? Do they get better? Are they able to, you know, make the play to improve in the areas where they were really deficient? For example, Pittsburgh's offensive line early in the season was not playing very well. When you go back and look at them against Cincinnati, you know, they were fortunate enough to beat Cincinnati. Then they went on a four-game losing streak, and a lot of that had to do with they couldn't protect, the inefficiency of their quarterback. But over the last, I would say, the last 5 weeks, they're 4-1. They're playing their best football. They should have beaten Baltimore if they don't turn that ball over. Now, I know they turned it over and they lost and they deserve to lose. But to me, they're improved. They have improved their game. And the last two weeks, they've only allowed 79 yards rushing against the Las Vegas Raiders and the Carolina Panthers, two teams that want to run the ball. So if they stop Baltimore from running, then I think they have a better chance. Baltimore can't throw the ball. They're not going to be able to function and throw the ball effectively.
Let's keep the Masson theme going. The Commanders, Michael Lombardi, haven't scored more than 20 points in a game since Week 11. Ergo, you're going to get Carson Wentz today. I'll get your take on that. But let's set it up. The Commanders 7-7-1, still alive for the postseason. They host Deshaun Watson, who's struggling in Cleveland right now. Cleveland's out of it, but Wentz is in. Washington's laying 2, 2.5.
Well, I mean, look, you know, I think he had to make the move to go to Wentz. And as much as you like Heinicke, you need to be able to expand the field and throw it down the field. And they've got really good skill players in Washington. The offensive line is really the problem. And this is where I think the Browns, I think this is an underplay here at 40.5. I also think, to me, the Browns' defense has got to create some turnovers for their offense. The Browns can run the ball. Hard to run the ball on Washington, though. Washington's front's pretty good. I mean, Atlanta ran the ball effectively on them. I mean, Atlanta ran for 167 yards. They couldn't throw it. That's a 19-13 game against Atlanta, right? So Cleveland's got to be able to run the ball. But the problem is Deshaun Watson's got to make some plays, because if you're going to beat Washington, you got to throw the football. You got to be able to make some explosive plays down the field, and you've got to be able to stay out of third and long and turn the ball over. Washington's not a great turnover defense. They're 23rd in the National Football League in that area. But you can move it at times. I think this is a game that's the unders in play. It's going to be, to me, a tight game. Wentz can't make a mistake. But I think they made the right decision, because they can't make any plays, to me, explosive plays. They don't run the ball effectively. They're 27th in the National Football League in yards per attempt rushing, right? And where Wentz has been bad, Patrick, this is really a key stat in all of football. So it's the expected completion rate. We all look at completion percentage and say, okay, that's good. But when a receiver's open and you don't throw him the ball in the right spot in the right location, that affects the passing game. Wentz was 29th in that area. Derek Carr, wow, who just got benched, was 30th. So this is one of the issues. Wentz's accuracy, when they need him to be accurate, is a concern, which plays into Cleveland. Cleveland has to play. I mean, I think they're playing for their future. They're playing for their future, whether it's Stefanski's future or the coordinator's future. But there's a lot of uncertainty in Cleveland.
To give credence to your underplay, Cleveland's past five games have gone under the posted total, including all four starts with Deshaun Watson, who is rusty to say the least. Could you repeat what you just said there about Derek Carr and Carson Wentz?
Well, so what happens is there's a stat that the expected completion percentage. When a guy is open, like let's take, for example, Derek Carr, 3rd and 5 because he threw the ball away. But the reality of it is, if a guy's open, he's wide open, and you don't throw him the ball where he can catch it, that is a number that affects your completion percentage, expected completion percentage. And as I wrote about in VSiN this week, Wentz is in the bottom third of that. Now, you're in that same category with Davis Mills. You're in that same category. Wentz is down there, right? And so that's where Derek Carr was. And wow, that's why Carr is going to get benched. So you can't really you can't just look at his numbers and say, well, he's 62% completion percentage. No, that number, based on the offensive scheme, should be higher. And that hurts what they do. It affects their offense on third down. It affects their ability to make plays.
That application of Carr is fascinating and gives you a little bit of a look behind the scenes as to why he was benched. The Commanders 7-7-1, of course, realistically, they have to beat the Browns. They have to beat the Cowboys to have a shot. But if they beat the Browns today and the Lions, Seahawks, and Packers lost, the Commanders would be in the postseason. What I'm trying to tell you is the Commanders are very much still alive here. They got Chase Young back, and I thought he popped against the 49ers last week.
Yeah, I mean, look, that game, they were in that game. And they just,
were in that
game. It's hard. It's hard to move the ball in the Niners consistently. In the second half, the game kind of blew away. I mean, the big run that Ray McCloud made was, you know, that's a gadget play. It wasn't that they just ran the football down their throat. You know, and they held San Francisco to 153 yards rushing with that play in there. So, look, this is a big game because they got Dallas next week. And what does Dallas have to play for next week?
They were in that 49er game. I'm glad you said that. The Commanders, the flow of that game was not indicative of the final score. Okay, that's for Masson. Now, when we come back, let's pay it off. The Giants, they win, they're in. Also, Miami and Teddy Bridgewater at New England. We'll get to that next here. Happy New Year. It's the Lombardi Line.